Hello and welcome back to The Fall of the Roman Empire. My name is Nick Holmes and this is episode 28 called Return of the Persians. In the last episode, we heard about the inadequacy of Constantine the Great's succession planning, with his ill-conceived choice of five co-emperors finally ending up with just two, Constantius in the east and Constans in the west. This was a lot better than having five, but even so, the empire was still essentially split between east and west, a division which I suggest was one of the main longer-term reasons for the fall of the Western Empire, but we'll get back to that subject in future episodes. More immediately, in the few years after Constantine's death, this division of the empire was creating problems already, since the Western army was simply not available to fight a new and dangerous enemy that was fully occupying the attention of the Eastern army. And this was, of course, Persia. Now, in the last episode, we discussed the reasons why the Persian threat had receded in the reigns of Diocletian and Constantine, and we heard how Diocletian had achieved a spectacular success over Persia and concluded the Peace of Nisibis in 299, which re-established Roman control over Armenia and Syria right up to the river Tigris. But now in 337 to 340, while Constans had been fighting his brother Constantine II in the west, Constantius had been fighting a desperate war against the formidable new Sasanian Shahanshah, or King of Kings, called Shapur II, and we will turn to this next. Shapur II was initially famous for coming to power when he was not even born. The story goes that a group of nobles conspired to murder, blind and imprison his three brothers when his father, Hormizd II, died in 309. At the time, Shapur's mother was pregnant with Shapur, and the nobles, judging that they could control the child king when he was born, swore allegiance to the unborn child by placing the Sasanian crown on his mother's stomach. Whatever the truth about this story, Shapur was born in 309 and somehow survived the regency of those nobles who had so brutally dispossessed his brothers from their inheritance. We have no records of the political intrigues that must have existed during his childhood, but when he reached the age of 16, Shapur succeeded to his inheritance without any objections. The moment he was crowned, he displayed great self-possession and drive. He would spend the next 54 years until his death in 379 in a whirlwind of activity that would leave Persia greatly strengthened and Rome weakened. As we discussed in the last episode 27, the Sasanian Empire that he inherited was a shadow of what it had been under his glorious namesake, Shapur I. Rome had humiliated it with the Peace of Nisibis in 299, and it had lost much of its eastern territory to the Kushano-Sasanian kingdom. If that was not bad enough, it had yet another enemy that was making inroads into the heart of the empire. These were the Arabs. In the early 4th century, Arab tribes had invaded southern Iran and had started to take control of the Sasanian province of Pars, which is equivalent to modern-day Persian Fars, and to control the region around the Persian Gulf. Immediately on becoming Shahanshah in 325, Shapur II led an expedition against them, which proved to be highly successful and particularly brutal. First, he pushed back a powerful Arab tribe called the Liad from Fars and re-established Sasanian control of the eastern side of the Persian Gulf. He then led his army across the Gulf and invaded what is now eastern Saudi Arabia. He implemented a reign of terror, sacking the large Arab trading port of Al-Kat, which is modern Katif, destroying other settlements, poisoning water wells, and pushing the Arab tribes into the Al-Hajar Mountains. The Arabs were so shocked by his brutal treatment of prisoners that he earned the nickname of, quote, "he who pierces shoulders," end quote, in reference to his practice of piercing prisoners' shoulders in order to insert a rope and drag them in long lines across the desert. He then campaigned far and wide in modern Saudi Arabia, even reaching Medina close to the Red Sea. Then, having forced the Arab tribes back into the interior, he constructed a wall starting at Al-Hira, which is today located in modern southern Iraq, and garrisoned strong points along the whole of the western side of the Persian Gulf. After this, stories of Shapur's cruelty passed into Arab folklore, and the Arabs would not pose a major threat again to the Sasanians until the age of the Islamic Arab conquests, 300 years later. By crushing the Arabs, Shapur had won his spurs and strengthened his position within Sasanian feudal politics. As evidence of this, he was not challenged by the Persian nobility throughout the rest of his reign. He could now turn to his greatest ambition, to defeat Rome. Although the Peace of Nisibis had ensured 40 years of peace between Rome and Persia, towards the end of Constantine's long reign, tensions started to mount between the two powers. Let's now look at the reasons for this. The first was that Shapur II's third brother, Hormizd, had fled to Constantinople. Hormizd had originally been imprisoned by the same nobles who had murdered and blinded his two other brothers in 309, before Shapur was born. However, in 323, Hormizd had managed to escape with his wife's help and presented himself to the Emperor Constantine, who took a liking to this refugee and gave him a position in the Roman army and a small palace outside Constantinople. Not surprisingly, Hormizd became an enthusiastic Roman supporter, much to Shapur's annoyance, who regarded him as a potential troublemaker and a threat to his own authority. When Shapur demanded his return, Constantine refused. Shapur resorted to bribery, sending Hormizd his wife, whose loyalty had facilitated his escape. But even though Shapur kept his side of the bargain and dispatched his wife unharmed, Hormizd refused to return. Exasperated, Shapur felt that Constantine had tricked him. Another reason was religion. While Christianity had been growing in the Roman Empire, Shapur had encouraged Zoroastrianism as the Sasanian state religion and was therefore hostile to the growing Christian community in Persia. When Constantine became more overtly Christian in his later life, Shapur increasingly regarded the Persian Christians as potential traitors and started to persecute them. This became more heated shortly before war broke out with Rome, since he imposed a double tax on his Christian subjects to pay for the war. Confronted with this, or conversion to Zoroastrianism, the bishop of the Eastern Christian Church, called Sherman Bar Sabai, protested and was executed. There followed in the 340s what Christians have termed Shapur's Great Persecution, which sounds from contemporary records to have been similar to Diocletian's Great Persecution nearly half a century before. Tens of thousands of Christians were martyred, including most of the senior clergy and both of Sherman Bar Sabai's successors. However, while Diocletian's persecution was fairly swiftly brought to an end, there was no such good fortune for the Christians in Persia, who remained a persecuted minority. A third reason for the growing enmity between Rome and Persia, according to the Roman chronicler Ammianus Marcellinus, who is our main source for 4th century Roman history, and normally a very reliable one, was Constantine's own pride. The story goes that one day a traveller from India arrived at Constantine's court bearing gifts for the emperor from the peoples of Asia in honour of the Roman emperor's great reputation. However, the traveller claimed that the Persians had treated him badly and stolen many of his precious goods. Marcellinus says that Constantine believed the man and wrote to Shapur demanding the return of the rest of his his gifts. Not surprisingly, Shapur denied all knowledge of the affair, whereupon Ammianus says Constantine declared war on Persia, starting a conflict that would last for most of the 4th century, and out of which Rome would emerge very much weaker. Ammianus was a critic of Constantine, and his account is almost certainly biased against him. However, it is probably true that Constantine suffered from a touch of arrogance when he contemplated war with Persia. Buoyed up by the Sasanians' poor track record against Rome in the last half century, together with his own sense of supremacy as he relished his sole rule of the empire. Whatever his true motives, it's certainly clear that in his last years he was preparing for war with Persia, just as Shapur was preparing for war with Rome. However, when this came, the timing of the war was unfortunate for the Romans, for it occurred only shortly before Constantine's death in 337, perhaps, as Ammianus says, with the Romans being the first to declare war, but it was certainly Shapur who struck first when he invaded Roman Armenia. With Constantine's unexpected death, the conduct of the war immediately fell to the young Constantius, and as his brothers Constantine II and Constans jostled for power in the west, the eastern Roman army found itself fully committed against the Persians. Indeed, we can be fairly sure that one reason for the Romans' failure to secure victory against Shapur was that no reinforcements arrived from the west to help. In particular, Constans commanded the elite Illyrian legions, which had formed the backbone of Aurelian and Diocletian's armies, and these were kept idly on the Danube while the eastern Roman army fought a bloody and bitter contest with the Persians. This was a mistake which Constantius resolved to remedy later in his reign when he secured sole control of the empire, as we shall hear later. However, this first Roman-Persian war favoured neither side in the end. Fought between 337 and 350, it was long, bloody and inconclusive. Although it was the largest Roman military engagement since Constantine had defeated his rival Licinius in 324, we have virtually no meaningful detail about the campaigns. All we have is a summary of the conflict, which says that there were 9 separate battles, the most significant of which was the Battle of Singara, which is modern Sinjar in Iraq, in which Constantius was at first victorious and plundered the Persian camp, only to be defeated in a night attack that rendered the battle inconclusive. Shapur's only success was the occupation of Roman Armenia, but he failed to take the critically important fortress of Nisibis, which, although it was besieged 3 times, valiantly withstood the Persian onslaught, no doubt with its inhabitants fully aware that, as Romans first and Christians second, their chances of survival if they surrendered were 0. To his credit, Constantius threw all his resources into this war, with no help from his brothers in the west, and he prevented a Roman collapse in Mesopotamia and held on to Diocletian's chain of forts constructed through the Syrian desert. Eventually, it was Shapur who caved in first. In 350, news of steppe nomads invading the eastern Sasanian provinces, in this case a tribe called the Massagetae, who appear to have been close relations of the Huns, caused him to divert Persian troops to the east and to call for a truce. So Constantius was saved by the Persian challenge of having to fight on 2 fronts, itself a familiar problem to the Romans, of course, with their 2 main frontiers in both west and east. However, no sooner could Constantius relax his efforts on the eastern front than developments took a turn for the worse in the west. For in 350, just as the truce with Shapur was agreed, news reached Constantius that his brother Constans had been murdered and his position usurped by a general in the Western army called Magnentius. The background to this insurrection was, to begin with, Constans's own lack of popularity with the army. It's difficult to ascertain the truth about his character, since what few sources we have could well have been biased in their description of him as lazy and licentious, but his major fault seems to have been his preference for his own personal bodyguard over the legions, causing the ordinary soldiers to dislike him. Certainly, he alienated his officers sufficiently for one of them to proclaim himself emperor. This was a general called Magnentius, of British and Frankish birth, who had a successful career in the Rhine army and was popular with his fellow officers and the rank and file. Although some historians have seen him as an example of the growing barbarization of the Roman army, as it's been termed, meaning the growing presence of Germanic soldiers within its ranks, he actually seems to have been a thoroughly Romanized German with a very successful army career, progressing through the ranks and joining Constans's elite bodyguard called the Herculians and Jovians, which was originally set up by Diocletian. As someone who had worked his way up by merit, he was probably not very different from the Illyrian emperors like Claudius Aurelian and Diocletian. And like them, he was also supremely ambitious and not afraid to aim for the top political positions. Urged on by his fellow officers, and in particular by another senior officer called Marcellinus, he proclaimed himself emperor on the 18th of January 350 in Gaul, in the town of Augustulum, which is modern Autun in France. Apparently, this happened at a military dinner party when he stepped outside to put on a purple toga and then reappeared to be greeted with cries of Augustus by all the senior officers present. Certainly, he had the unequivocal backing of the Rhine army. Very surprisingly, Constans seems to have been totally oblivious to this discontent with his rule, and when Magnentius was putting on his purple toga, he was happily engaged on a hunting expedition near the Pyrenees. Magnentius sent a small force to kill him. The hunter became the hunted, and Magnentius was killed. Thereupon, the armies in Britain and Spain quickly followed their Gallic comrades in declaring their support for Magnentius. Suddenly, Constantius, at that moment enjoying a respite from his Persian war, found himself confronted with a difficult choice. Should he recognise his brother's murderer and try to avoid civil war or not? Magnentius was keen to please Constantius and issued coins bearing his name and indicating that he was the senior Augustus. But Constantius was only too aware that by acknowledging his brother's murderer, he would be giving up his own rights of legitimacy on the imperial throne. And so he decided to launch the empire into yet another civil war. And that ends this episode. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. And if you did, of course, I'd be delighted for any ratings or reviews in whichever podcast app you use. And in the next episode, we'll hear how Constantius dealt with Magnentius in the West and the Persians in the East. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.